Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hubley.
Welcome back in as The Drive is live on a Wednesday. And remember, come hang out with us tomorrow as it is another edition, but not just another edition, a playoff edition. Going to be special out there. Playoff edition of Thirsty Thursdays. Buffalo Wild Wings, the Willowbrook location right off Tomball Parkway. If you are looking for a landmark, Willowbrook Mall, the other side of the highway. A spot we go to a lot. We have a good time there. I think that's Scarlet, right? I think that is Scarlet's spot, our bartender.
Yes. I was not real sure where you were going on that.
Yes, sir. Scarlet, the bartender.
Well, you scared me with that one.
A stripper or whatever you were thinking.
I was just trying to think of my history, my past.
I mean, I don't think very many people have a Scarlet.
I do not.
In their locker. You know, I mean, in their rafters, excuse me.
I don't think I do.
Yeah, no, but I don't think that Scarlet, I mean, you're one of a kind. If you got a Scarlet in your rafters in your jersey list.
We ought to sit around and talk about the names, just random names.
Yeah,
you got a random name? Why did I say
Felicity?
Probably Felicity. Boy, mm-hmm. Where'd you find her?
She was a freak.
She was in a shake. You found her in a shake between here and College Station somewhere?
Nope.
I got redhead written all over.
OBT.
Really? In the dirty, huh?
Oh, yeah.
You came over on my side. Was she a Pelly rat?
And she was dirty. Felicity.
Listen to him.
He's making this up. They
just had a flashback.
I don't think you had a Felicity. I really don't. I don't.
That time in Kima.
Kima? You took her from OBT to Kima?
Now I definitely don't believe you now.
Did you try to...
I know Megan knows you had a pass, but I don't think you'd be this aggressive.
Did you try to lock her up or...
Okay, he's going
to
get...
She tried to lock me up. Ooh. I had to get out of there.
Proposed to him.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, good for you, man. If you got a Scarlet in your... or a Felicity. Huffman. If you have one of those, go ahead and tap yourself on the back.
Yeah, girl.
You got a good list. All right. But again, we'll be out there tomorrow. Come hang out with us. Willowbrook location, Buffalo Wild Wings, a little Thirsty Thursday playoff edition. So should be fun coming out with us. Shout out to Bud Light. Shout out to Buffalo Wild Wings. You know we don't come empty-handed. Be prizes for you to win as well. So come hang out with us tomorrow. All right, Clint, we've talked about this and kind of talked around, and I think there's a space where we can go deeper on this. And obviously, we love hearing from the people, 713-572-4610, YouTube and Twitch, even the sensitive ones. We love hearing from the people. How do you feel about this? And maybe you disagree with the premise of it anyway, but do you think, are you okay with the Texans treating C.J. Stroud basically like a game manager? Because that's what it feels like to me for the most part. This feels very different than, you know, his first year where it felt like, not even felt like, my man D'Amico, I'll never forget after the Colts game that got them into the playoffs that won the division, he said, whatever we're going to do is going to be because of C.J. Stroud. We're going to win because of C.J. Stroud. And Clint, it feels like it is a shift, obviously, with the number one defense, but it does feel like it is more of a just don't turn it over, you know, just don't be the reason why we lost and not as much the reason why we win, which to me generally feels very game manager-like. And it's worked, right? They've won 9 in a row. They've gotten to playoffs. They've won 12 games. They're a team that people really look at in this field that can get to a Super Bowl. But what's your feeling? You think the Texans should be approaching C.J. Stroud this way?
Absolutely I think they should. I mean, the moment that you hired Nick Caley, knowing that this was the system, it's the quarterbacks he's got to fit the system. He's got to, you know, wholeheartedly, blindly commit to what it is they want him to do. And so whether you look at the system Or you look at a couple of factors that I think you marry them together and you've landed where you are. Pressure and quarterback sacks became a major problem. You didn't fix the offensive line by spending money on proven talent. And so whether you look at Nick Caley schematically, philosophically, what he believes in doing, it's going to be an interesting fit for C.J. Stroud long-term, to say the least. I think that's fair. And game management is what they want him to do to an extreme, right? So whether you look at it from Caley's offensive mind and schematically and philosophically what they want to do, or you look at it from the major problems that was sacks and pressures last year to not like fixing the offensive line, I'm talking about with proven players that were on the market, proven veteran free agents kind of deal, and shoring up the offensive line. And that's why you've arrived at, hey, man, the only way you survive and the only way we can even keep our head above water offensively is if we basically, tiptoe our way through games with a great defense. Regardless of how or why, this situation that they're in is exactly, they signed up for this. They signed up for this. I mean, they signed up for this when they hired Nick Caley.
They signed up for him being a game manager.
Absolutely. And they signed up with it when they didn't fix the offensive line. Absolutely, 100%. He has no other option. And whether he has no other option than right now to be as elite of a game manager as he can possibly be, and that is exactly what the offense asked him to do. So I think this is exactly what they should do with him.
I despise it.
I don't like the fit.
Well, let me get this. Are you saying that this is an offense? Because someone just texted in, they aren't treating CJ like a game manager. This is a game manager offense. Yeah. I will disagree a little bit like that. They take the ball out of the quarterback's hand. I mean, they try to minimize risk with later in games.
I would argue that that's the number one job of a game managing quarterback is to minimize risk.
They minimize it where there's not even a chance to go and make plays because it's handoff or whatever.
Yeah.
Are you saying that this offense will only allow for a game manager, or is this an offense where you can say, no, we're going to win because this guy makes plays and not just because, hey man, just don't kind of mess it up, because that's what it feels like they're doing with him.
In this offense, the number one thing you have to be is an elite game manager. You can have a great arm or a lesser arm. You can be a great athlete or a lesser athlete. None of that. All of that is secondary to, hey, we're going to ask you to take as little risk as you can, be smarter than the opponent, be extremely efficient, and be super calculated when you take shots. And if you take shots, the game will dictate whether you need to take shots. It could be a 3-point game, but if we feel like we're in complete control and our defense is controlling their offense, we're going to choke this thing way down, and it's going to be more important to milk the clock than it is to score points. That is what this offense is, and the philosophy behind what they're doing here in Houston. And I believe that, as I said yesterday, in this offense, I don't think there'll be a day when we're talking about C.J. Stroud being a top 10 quarterback again.
Because of the offense.
Because it is going to require deep runs in the playoffs and championships for a quarterback in this kind of system to get the credit that he deserves. It's going to take 25 touchdowns or 30 touchdowns and 4 interceptions for him to be viewed as a top 10 guy. And as I said, when it happened, his rookie year, when it happened, I said, it's going to be unbelievably difficult for C.J. Stroud to duplicate the numbers that he put up his rookie year.
Who would you say in this system, quarterback-wise, has been the best?
Brady.
Right?
You can argue he's been one of the only ones that's been worth a damn.
I'm not saying that C.J. needs to be up to Brady's level, which is right now the best we've ever seen. But I never probably – halfway through his career, I never looked at it and thought, boy, they're winning they're winning, and Tom's just kind of riding along. Like I thought they were winning because they got Tom Brady, and regardless of the offense, it seems like they put the responsibility and everything on his shoulders. Like that was the driving force to winning for the Patriots. Maybe not early when they had that defense and it was Tom's first several years, but I don't know, man. Towards the back end of that first dynasty, that first run, all the way through. Yeah. He was the driving force in that offense.
Oh, I agree.
And once
they were winning Super Bowls and winning games like at that kind of clip, and he was like the best we've ever seen in the system. Yeah, I agree. So I'm saying, I think CJ's got to make the Texans have to make a multiple deep runs, and they've got to win a Super Bowl before CJ Stroud starts getting the credit that he deserves. It's got to be, hey, this kid's a winner. Hey, this kid is unbelievably competitive. This kid makes everybody around him better. This kid's the smartest guy on the field. He is the most cerebral quarterback we've ever seen. He's never wrong. He lives and breathes over an extended period of time this efficient brand of ball that's minimizing risk before he's ever given the credit that he deserves. There's not going to be another year where he goes out there and throws 30 plus touchdowns and 4 interceptions and throws for flirts with 5,000 yards.
I just wonder if the mindset will change for them, because the mindset right now to me is play through our defense. And I'm not saying it's not like a bad thing, system or not, it's play through our defense. And I think if they were in whatever system, they probably would be doing things that says play through our defense. And again, as I said, they've got the number one defense in football. You can understand that, but man, it just feels weird to watch that guy with guys like Nico Collins, that talent, and it seems like they are making the decision to make the. I think B. Scott has said that make the Ferrari drive in a
school zone.
Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if he's a Ferrari, but damn it, he's a. He's a nice Acura. He's shown to be a lack. Like wow. Something, and like they are, it's like they're a, like I don't, I think clearly him and Davis are different, but it seems like they're approaching the quarterback position and what they are expecting those guys to do the same way. Now, the only time that we really get a chance to see it is when all hell breaks down and CJ's got to run away from pass rushers, and then he makes plays, you know, off script and gets down the field. That's the difference. But they're not approaching. There is not second halves, Clint, where they have the lead, and the approach is let's stomp them, let's stomp their throats in and end it.
Yep.
And CJ, go end it, because we are riding you. I've watched the Jags do it. I watched them in Denver have a lead in the second half and put the ball in Trevor's hands to make the lead bigger and to go and win because of Trevor. But and I think CJ should be looked at that way. But I just hate that.
I think there's a real internal struggle. And I don't think it's just one-sided. I think it's all the way around. I think there's a real – just overall, generally speaking, broad brush here, paint with a broad brush, does C.J. Stroud, is he comfortable? Is he happy? Is he a good fit in what Nick Caley's doing offensively? I think that's a conversation that's going to go on, if it's not already going on, between him and David Mulugeta. I think it's a conversation that's going on between D'Amico, Caley, and Nick Caserio as well, on both sides of the deal. Because it's not, we're talking about, you're like, what's pissing you off is the physical ability being limited.
Well, yeah, I what's pissed me off is the mindset of, like, I don't know that there's another quarterback in any quarterback that we think has the skill level of CJ, and not just the skill level, but shown it.
Yeah.
Shown what he's capable of doing.
Yeah.
That if they get a lead, whoop.
Yep.
Let's try to drag ourselves to that lead.
Yep.
What was that again?
Coach Berman, sorry.
I like that.
Just drag ourselves to that lead.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm looking at this thing, right? Like, help, Brock Purdy? He putting it in Brock's hands.
Oh, I mean, look, go up the coast a bit. Old buddy in Seattle.
Putting it in his hands.
And that guy was seeing ghosts a couple years
ago. He's got a great defense.
Yeah.
Like, go look at their, like, he's got a great defense. Putting it in his hands. I just, whew. I understand there, and I can I understand they've won 9 straight. This defense is nasty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's.
I agree with you. Look, I'm a Texans fan, and I
they play
I
believe, like this with Davis Mills. I got it.
I believe the Texans product would be significantly better if it was an offense that fit C.J. Stroud. Just from a standpoint of, hey, we're gonna stay aggressive. We're going to stay aggressive. We're going to drive the ball down. Now, I'm not saying we're going to talk about five-headed monsters and drop back and carelessly rip the ball down the field. But these guys, to an extreme, are patient, check the ball down. We're going to establish the run, like, to an extreme. I don't want what we saw last year. Like, I don't want them putting it in the head of C.J. Stroud. We're going to stretch the field. We're going to take shots. We're going to be aggressive. I don't want that. But just – you know, there just is a lot of to your point, there's a lot of tampering down instead of, hey, man, let's go play football.
When you got that.
Yeah.
And Nico.
And you do got a Ferrari in the garage.
And Nico. Yeah. You got All right, coming up, a little stock up, stock down. As we'll look at the Texans, whose stock is up, whose stock is down. That's coming up next.
Cocaine and hookers, my friend. Tootski, come on. Mm-hmm.
Ah. Every football season brings highs.
Yes! Rock and roll!
And lows.
Every week, though, there's no excuse for that.
Oh, no.
It's time to buy or sell.
I tell him to sell!
It's Texans Stock Up, Stock Down on The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
I pump those numbers up. Those are rookie numbers in this racket.
It is Stock Up, Stock Down on The Drive, and we got a Texans wild card edition, a playoff edition of stocks for these Houston Texans live on The Drive. I want to start with you, Ron, the show, Hughley. You know how I do. I like to get the negatives out of the way. Let's focus on the good later. So for all you sensitive-ass listeners out there, I think it's just one or two of you, hold tight. We'll get through Stock Down.
I think it's more like 6-7 of them.
6-7! We'll do Stock Down. Just hold your horses, calm down, we'll get to Stock Up. So we're on the show, Hughley, as the Texans head to Pittsburgh for a Monday night matchup against the Steelers in the wild card round. Stock down for you for the Texans.
Yeah, my stock down is to one of the best players, arguably the best player on their team. And that is Derek Stingley Jr. He is a great player, an all-pro, maybe an all-pro for the second straight year. Although I think there has been some slippage from last year, he's still a great player. He was not great on Sunday. And for this team, they need their great players, especially their great players on defense, to play that way for this team to give itself the best chance to win. And, I mean, he was getting beat by Pierce. Hell, there was a sequence on one of the Pierce touchdowns. He got beat on second down on one side of the end zone by Pittman. Pittman just dropped it for the second time. And then the very next play, he got beat in the end zone by Pierce. And it's one-on-one, and we're not accustomed to seeing that. And there were some moments in Sunday's game. It was a half. I know maybe there's an excuse of he wasn't really into it. That's generally not how the Texans approach things, but they need Derek Stingley and their great players to be great. And Alec Pierce and Pittman aren't supposed to beat him the way they did at times in that game on Sunday. So stock down to Derek Stingley. I'm certain he will turn it around on Monday, but that was disappointing to watch one of the best players in football get beat by, I think, you know, all right, dudes.
Stock down for Ron the Show Hughley as Derek Stingley Jr. heading into wild card weekend for these Houston Texans. Now to our former NFL quarterback, Mr. Clint Sterner. Dirty Red, stock down in your view for the Houston Texans right now preparing for the Steelers.
Man, I'm going to go with Kayvon Wallace. I think he's still kind of dangling out there, boys. I mean, I still think this is one where unless something that happened behind closed doors that we're not privy to forced this release and was the reason they chose him, I got to believe that there's conversations that have been had and he will be back and his status with the team will not change. However, the longer it stays hanging out there, the more I worry about it. I say stock down for Kayvon Wallace just because, hell, I thought starter for sure. Fits the damn swarm mentality like a glove. There's some people out there that maybe think that his performance this week left a lot to be desired. I mean, even if that's the case, I mean, what are your options? I mean, you're down several safeties this year. I don't know. So Kayvon Wallace is clearly his stock down, even if it is just a roster manipulation play. Boy, that's a risky move with a guy that's getting some run.
Yeah, when you ain't on the team no more. Yeah. I got you. That's a stock down.
You are tuned in to Stock Up, Stock Down every Wednesday right here on The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. About 3:30 every hump day, we're doing a wild card edition, playoff edition for these Houston Texans going to Pittsburgh. Stock down's out of the way. Hanglin out there for you to go back and listen to if you want it. Back over to you, Rod, the show, Hughley. And listen here, sensitive ass out there on my text line. Stock up. That means positive. In your view, Ron?
I got to go with Xavier Hutchinson. You just can't. I mean, you just can't kill that guy. There have been multiple occasions I thought he was not going to be on the roster. There were multiple occasions if he was on the roster, I thought he was going to be nothing more than a special teams guy. And he had a nice game, big chunk play down the sideline where he caught across the middle and start running away from people, which sometimes I wonder, is that his game? But he's able to do it. And, hell, he's been the best of the Iowa State players. He's been the most consistent of the Iowa State players. It don't matter. You go draft draft Higgins in the second round, your first pick of the draft. Still doesn't knock him down. You go and get Noel. Still don't knock him down. Who was my man from
John Carroll?
From Alabama, who they traded away.
Mechie.
John Mechie. Draft him. Don't matter.
X going to give it to you.
Yeah, he survived. He survived Stephon Diggs, everybody. And he still is a major part of this offense. And he deserves to be. He has been. That is a really good pick for Nick. You're right. That's a really good pick for Nick Caserio, the way that's worked out for him.
There you go.
Xavier Hutchinson, stock up, and he's been a big part of this offense, and I think we'll continue in this playoff run. Dude just can't die.
And back to you, Clint Sterner. Put a lid on this thing for us. Stock up for the Houston Texans as they prepare for the Steelers on Monday night and a wild card matchup.
This is an easy one for me, man. I'm going Tommy Togiai. I mean, obviously it's low-hanging fruit on a day like this after a game like this where he scores a touchdown. It's easy to go with him. But I think the conversation around Tommy Togiai has changed. He's no longer a one-year, $3 million guy. He's no longer the fourth-round pick. I believe by the Cleveland Browns that bounced around in their organization and the Falcons organization and kind of was just a late pickup, a late add, a depth player. He's no longer that guy. That conversation, the thought of like, oh boy, this Tommy Togiai guy, boy, he's really helping us and he had a good game. No, I think when you watch his play beyond the touchdown, when you watch his play, he is a really, really, really good player. We've heard D'Amico Ryans talk about how important he is to the D-line room and ultimately the defensive unit.
Their best interior D-lineman?
Yes.
He's better. You think he does more than Sheldon Rankins?
Yep.
I was going to say, for that to be a conversation.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's just because Tim Settle's injured, Foley's injured, all the rest of them. Like, we've watched all those guys play over the last several years. There is an argument that Tommy his play has been better than all of those guys.
Well, I mean, he fits in a mold with maybe two other guys that are really built and to do what they're asked to do, and he's really, really good at it. The bottom line is this: the conversation around him has just changed significantly. I mean, I'd be shocked if he's not a guy they give a multi-year deal to, and that he's not here longer term. I'm not saying he's going to break the bank, but he's. I don't think he's any longer a one-year guy. I don't think he's any longer a journeyman that kind of just snuck in, you know, slipped through the cracks with a couple of other organizations, and they picked him up. I think the conversation around him is he is a key player on this defense moving forward.
He was in the Kurt Heinrichs, Khalil Davis kind of range there. Yep. Like, oh, man, that's a big pickup that you didn't expect to where, like if he got hurt, and not just because of the injuries already there, but if he got hurt, that would be a huge loss. Yep. Like, even if Settle was healthy, Foley was healthy, if he got hurt, that would be a huge loss, and that is Tommy. He is
the arrow's pointed up,
way up, and you might have to point something more than arrows up with him. You might have to point some zeros there, Cal. Not to spend your money, but
hold on, show.
Your wife's out here calling big plays for him. Shoot, you might have to pay him a little cash. Happy about it. All right, coming up as we continue here on The Drive. An hour from now, we'll hear from B. Scott, so stay tuned for that for our Texans report. But Nick Caserio, the general manager, speaks about maybe the number one thing that the Texans have to stop in this game against the Steelers. We'll discuss that coming up next.
Bad MF-er.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome back in as we are live here on The Drive. We're getting you ready here for a little playoff. We're used to this. This is 3 years in a row the Texans have made the postseason. And another thing we're accustomed to is the Texans winning. The Texans winning in the playoffs as well, as they will take on Pittsburgh coming up on Monday. We will have that for you, including us Monday. We'll be what are we going to 4:15? And then we're going to hand things over to Sean and Seth.
Yes, sir.
So, hey, man, we're going to have this party started now. We're going to get it going here for a huge one coming up. By the way, also, come hang out with us tomorrow as a little playoff edition of Thirsty Thursday at Buffalo Wild Wings. We will be at the Willowbrook location. And come hang out with us. We'll be in Katy on Friday, right, for a little bit of football Friday.
That's right. Boomer Jacks.
Boomer Jacks, I've had some good times at that.
That's a good one too.
Yeah, it's a good time.
I missed when we were down on the south. I believe it's in League City. Is that where the one is down there, Webster?
Oh, Webster. Yeah, I think there is. We've been to. There's two locations.
I missed the one on the south side. The other one was out in Katy. That's when that's when you found out you got the bad news on your pops. Remember?
Yes. And so then we went to the and then the other one. I can't remember the other one because B. Scott was with me on the other one. I can't remember that. But no, man, we'll have a good time coming up. Playoff edition, football Friday, and then Thirsty Thursday tomorrow. Buffalo Wild Wings, Willowbrook, that Willowbrook location. So come on, hang out with us tomorrow. All right. Here is Nick Caserio. He spoke about DK Metcalf, and they have not had DK Metcalf the last 2 weeks because he decided to put his hands on a fan in Detroit. Could you imagine had that field goal to gone through? I mean, they may have cut his ass. Probably not, but they may have done. I mean, he'd have been in some real hot water. So, by the way, they probably got a pretty motivated player coming into this game in DK Metcalf, and he's a really good receiver and can be a great receiver at times, but this was Nick Caserio talking about DK Metcalf and potential problems he could present to this defense.
Yeah, he's a significant problem. I mean, you know, receivers don't grow on trees like that. I mean, he's big, he's strong, he's fast. When he gets the ball in his hands, talk about tackling.
Yeah.
I mean, he's hard to get to the ground. He has a big play element, which he's certainly added to their offense. I mean, go back to the Baltimore game, not the last week here, but a few weeks ago. I mean, I think he had 150, 60 yards receiving. And, you know, Aaron's not afraid to give players an opportunity to make a play on the ball. Like, we saw that even going back to last year with the Jets when he put the ball up there to Garrett Wilson, and Garrett made the play there in the end zone. against Kamari. So when you have a guy like DK, you're thinking, well, I'm going to give my guy an opportunity to make a play on the ball. And once he gets a ball in his hand, like, we're going to have to tackle him. So, no, he's a big part of their offense, and I'm sure they're excited to have him back for our game.
All right, Clint, and the people, you can jump in on this, 713-572-4610, YouTube and Twitch, as usual. He's not the best receiver in the league. They've faced some really good receivers. Smith and Jigba in Seattle, who I think probably had the best year this season. They faced some really good receivers in the league this year. But he is a different type of receiver, Clint, and I think that's going to be a big thing offensively, and it may be the number one thing that they're discussing is how do we approach handling DK Metcalf? He is a big-bodied receiver, speed, can catch the ball in traffic. He is a big play guy, as Nick Caserio just talked about. But the Texans have the two best best corner tandem in football, with Kamari Lassiter, who will be back, you would assume, and Derek Stingley Jr. How do you approach handling this situation? Do you travel him with, you know, Derek Stingley, what they've done in the past, or not? Like, how would you handle DK Metcalf in this?
Well, it's the big play element is what scares you. What Nick Caserio said there, that's the part that scares you, coupled with the fact that he's got one of the most elite passers of the football that can still spin it in an elite fashion, throwing the ball to him. So that's the part that scares you, right? I lean more towards stay in the structure of your defense unless it becomes a problem for DK Metcalf. I do think there is a slight size difference if you look at the depth chart, or you look at the bio of each player between Derek Stingley and Kamari Lassiter, it's 15 pounds and a couple of inches max. I mean, but there's the reality of it is Derek Stingley's a more well-built corner, just a bigger, longer corner. So I think he probably has a better chance to make the plays on him.
But Kamari's physical as hell.
Yeah. It's But I think I would stay in structure and try to eliminate and let's see if Will Anderson and Daniil and what I've done all year long, the creating the chaos around an immobile quarterback, let's see if I can force the ball out quick. Let's see if I can force some errant throws, get some turnovers. But if all of a sudden I see that, hey, man, our pressures aren't getting home with four, and Aaron Rodgers has got too much time back there, I've got to find a way to take DK Metcalf. Because the truth is, if you take DK Metcalf out of the game, I like Calvin Austin. You know, I like what's the cat?
Adam Thielen. They got
what's the other cat that's been MV?
MVS.
Yeah. Isn't that who's with him there too?
Yeah.
So I mean, I like some of those guys, but if you take that big horse out of the game, then the threat, the big play threat, the ability to separate, man, it is significantly decreased, and so I could see a situation where they get Derek Stingley mirroring him and following him, but I don't think from
he
jump.
Would be
I think
the one,
from jump, yeah. I'm going to stay in structure.
I'm with you. I think Kamari Lassiter has earned that and has played to that level. And I think his physicality. I think he is, if not one of the best tackling corners in the league. He's physical. I said it to you guys before the show. I think he gets a sports Woody thinking about the potential physicality that he could have with DK Metcalf.
I do wonder though, Ron, of like, and I'll be honest with you, I'm probably a little bit overemphasizing it because I've stood on the sideline next to him.
He's a big.
You can be as physical as you want, but if your arms ain't long enough and you ain't got enough lead in your ass, he's a horse, man. I mean, he's a different. I mean, the only guy that I didn't stand next to, we played him a few times, but I never got close to him, was old boy in Detroit. I mean, that's the only, but I mean, still, he is an absolute horse. And so I do wonder if the sheer size of DK Metcalf isn't a problem for, for, even though he's the more physical guy, I wonder if that DK Metcalf, the size isn't a tad bit overwhelming. It just, Stingley looks significantly bigger than Kamari Lassiter when you see him on the field. They look significantly bigger, and I wonder if Stingley could handle, if he becomes a problem, I would venture to say Stingley could handle him a little bit better.
Yeah, and someone texted in, and I think I'd agree with you as well. I think you would agree with this as well. You handle DK with 51 and 55, period. Rodgers has to be more uncomfortable than Josh Allen in Houston on Thursday night. But you also know, like, you're going to probably get a lot of back shoulder. You're going to get a lot of, like stuff where it's down the field, but it's quick.
Yeah.
Right? And using his body and trying to use his size to go up. So I mean, I don't know what they do in terms of, do they follow or do they keep it just straight up? I do know they need to follow if he's in the slot though. Like if they start to put him in the slot, I think like to me, I would feel very comfortable all the time if one of those two were covering him.
Yeah.
I don't know that I love anybody else in the secondary having to cover him, unless it is just a flat ass double that you can just clearly see right off the bat. Which hell, that might be what you need to do anyway, just because there's just going to be a lot of, all right, jump ball or yeah, contested catches, well, type of situation.
He's not a versatile enough player for me to change what I do defensively. You know what I mean? He's not a Jamar Chase. He's not a Smith and Jigba. He's a below average route runner.
He's got more Mike Evans kind of.
He's got more Mike Evans in from a play style. And then if you want to talk about how he's used, it's more kind of like Nico. Hey, man, we're going to put you over here on the boundary receiver, and I'm going to find a way to get you the ball if they single you up or. Like I don't know how much they're going to move him. I haven't studied the Rams a ton, but every time I watch him, he's pretty stagnant, pretty stationary. I agree with you, man. Like more of a Mike Evans play style, and within that offense, doesn't move a whole lot. And so,
he's much bigger.
He would have to become a major. The problem is the boogeyman for this defense has been the big play,
And he can move once he gets going straight.
And he's got a huge catch window. He can run by you. He's a load once he does catch the ball. So, I mean, all the things that have been a bugaboo for this defense, I think DK Metcalf presents a problem. Now, again, 51 and 55 can shut that down quicker than anybody. We'll see if they can on Monday.
Text line coming through, you're wrong for comparing him to Evans or Nico. Like, no, I mean, the Evans part is like, Mike Evans doesn't run a ton of routes, and DK Metcalf doesn't run a ton of routes either. Like, there's a lot of DK and Mike Evans run straight down with the hand up.
Sure.
To use their size, and they may run some slants. And then I think to the point you were making with Nico is they just don't move him.
They don't move him. You know where he's at.
Yeah.
He's easy to track.
But no, Mike Evans and him, you're not seeing a lot of different routes coming from those two guys. They're on the outside doing a lot of down the field.
Yep.
Hands up. There ain't a lot of in and out of breaks and stuff. What you got coming up?
College football, baby. Look, what guardrails they do have on NIL and transfer portal, hey, you can throw them out the window, man. You can throw them out the window. Not that it matters. It was already so loose it didn't matter. But Lane Kiffin has to be the most hated coach in the game. And I'm talking about in coaching circles, in college football circles. He's got to be the most hated coach in the game. I'll explain the problem, and we'll work out the details next right here on Sports Radio 610.